you're once able to help somebody go from a $3,000 compensation that the insurance company agreed to $600,000 is what you were able to get them rewarded.
Joliet, Illinois. That was a truck shop that burned down. And that was, I won't name the insurance company, but they gave him a quick check of $3,000 and said, hey, you know, inventory the contents, give us this. And they just gave him a whole list, just overwhelmed him. And then he asked, well, when you guys are coming out? Like, well, you give us this, then we'll do it. And they just delayed it and went back and forth. It was like 4 or 5 months. Then he finally called me. I was referred by another client that we helped. And we did our list, and he had so many other coverages because it was a business policy. It was like a book this thick. I have it somewhere still, and it's just all like highlighters and all because we go through it with the team and actually dissect the policies. And ended up being like 600, not more. It was a pretty large loss, and that's normal though for our firm. Another example is of a claim where people think the insurance company paid well. We had one. This was I think 16 or 26 unit, or I forget exactly, but it was in Champaign, Illinois. And the gentleman had a fire. He had an actual cash value policy. So the insurance company, the RCV or the replacement cost, the total policy limit was 500,000. But after they took depreciation out, they only gave him 300. But mm-hmm. He wasn't going to rebuild. So he would never get that money back. The 200,000, he would be losing out on that money. So when he hired us, when we called the adjuster, the adjuster actually said, why is he, I don't know why he needs you guys or why he even hired you. He got paid limits. I'm like, well, he got paid limits, but he's only getting 300 because he's not going to recover it. He's going to lose out on 200,000. And I'm looking at your estimate. You stopped writing, meaning I could tell you with these many units, you stopped writing when you got to those limits. So we ended up writing our estimate for like 850. And ended up maxing out the $500,000 that he got up front, plus other coverages. So he got, again, $550,000, if not maybe like close to $600,000 as well. And wow. Then he demoed the building. He demoed it for, I think, $20,000, $25,000, sold the land, so got his money back. So
that's incredible. So can you talk a little? I think not everyone understands like actual cash value.
Sorry, I threw some mortgage.
No, that's all right. I assumed that I knew, but I think I don't understand if you're able to get paid more. I thought there was a cap. So if you can kind of explain the difference between it and then how maybe you were able to negotiate past that cap.
So each policy, again, each insurance company, each policy is so much different. They have endorsements for law and ordinance, meaning you have a limit for your structure, let's just say 100,000, but then you have law and ordinance upgrade, which is, let's just say 10% of the 100,000. So it'd be another 10,000. And that's paid for basically if you have a fire and now you need to bring all the electrical up to code. So they owe you for that. There's usually a 5% debris removal additional coverage, which then would give you another 5%. So now you're tacking on all these additional coverages to get 100,000. When it comes to replacement costs and actual cash value, so you calculate everything on replacement costs. What is it worth now? And then you, by age, you minus the depreciation. You're probably familiar with depreciation. And then you get the actual cash value. That depreciation is only recover that if you actually spend the money.
Got it. Okay.
Right. So in the gentleman said this, I think it was Jeff, in his situation, we were able to write all the damages, the total, where even after depreciation, he would still recover that actual cash value up front.
Okay, got it.
If that makes sense. And then we also got him loss of rent and all this other stuff. But
yeah, okay. And so that was actual cash value. And then you said replacement cost is basically they just pay for what it costs to replace it.
So that's the replacement cost. Some people don't have replacement cost policies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they only have an actual cash value.
Got it. Yeah.
Now, if you have a replacement cost, but you don't want to rebuild or maybe you want to do something different, well, then we have to figure out how can we maximize the loss? How can we get it, written up, show that there's so much damage that we can get you that money up front so you don't have to worry about that depreciation or rebuilding back.
Okay.
Okay. Right. And then there's also personal property. So if you have a fire and let's just say you have your business and you have all these tools and everything, and we actually have a team that goes in and inventories everything.
I see.
So it's not only the structure. There is loss of income. So calculating all your loss of income if you're a business, same thing, having your books. And we actually have an account that goes and presents all the books to the insurance company on what you're owed because what you're losing because of the loss. So there's a lot that goes into, especially rentals and business policies.
Yeah. Yeah. And with replacement costs, it was brought to my attention recently, and I'd love your take on this, but with appreciation so much recently over the last couple of years, you know, most properties have appreciated a whole bunch. So if you got a policy 2 years ago or 5 years ago and set the replacement cost limit on that policy and it's appreciated since then, is it still capped at that limit automatically, or do they take into account appreciation over time?
No, it's capped at that. The insurance agent should be looking into that and saying, hey, we got to raise your limits. That would be a good agent. Most agents don't do that. But that's the limit. They don't take appreciation to account. Something that I would give advice to people too, because a lot of these insurance companies, when they evaluate your policy and when they come up with the premium and the coverages, they look at, they insure you for what the house is worth. Sometimes you have to be careful with that, because remember, a house where we're at in Indiana compared to another part of Indiana, same house can be huge difference, right? One can be 100, one can be 300. So it's the replacement cost. It's what does it cost to replace that home, whether it's in this area or this area, not what it's worth, but what it's going to take, especially in today's world. That same house now from 2 years ago might be 40% more to rebuild than it was before 2 years ago. Pre-COVID.
Got it. Yeah. So it's on you. So if you're listening to this and you set up your insurance policy several years ago, it might be prudent to go back and talk to your insurance agent. It's probably going to cost you a little bit more in premiums, but it would be smart to adjust that cap on what, or the value that your property is listed at, because you're not going to get anything more than that if it burns to the ground. That's interesting.
I'll tell you one. State Farm, for example, law and ordinance is usually standard. It's usually standard on every policy, meaning it comes with pretty much every policy. Now they're making it where it's like an additional endorsement that you have to buy. And I know on rentals for State Farm, it actually doesn't come with on the homeowners. It comes, it's automatically on the policy. But when it comes to your rentals, it's not. So actually, I know we added it to all our rentals, and it was literally, I think, $5 or $7 a year extra to have that 10% of additional coverage of the total amount to the insurance. So, and premiums go up every year. So premiums are going to keep going up no matter what, just like everything else. It's worth the extra couple bucks to have good coverage.
Yeah, I've noticed that there's certain things that it really doesn't cost you almost anything more, but it actually, if you need it, it's huge. That's great. I know you work with a lot of insurance companies. Are there any companies you recommend to start with if somebody was like, I want to, you know, start getting some quotes, some, you know, are good? And then are there any that you say that you work with often that are a huge pain that fight the claims the most?
I don't know if I can say which ones are the good ones, which ones are the bad. Which ones are easy to work with in our end? There might be right now with premiums, it might not be that bad. But ones that we know that have been pretty good is Openly Insurance. It's a newer one. Amica is really good. They're easy to work with. They look to actually pay claims and work with us and work with the insurance to pay claims. Openly is the same way. And Lemonade has been good too.
Really?
That we've worked with those three insurance. And there's a lot more good ones. The bad ones, you have to be careful. If you know you're a veteran, and thank you for your service, but you probably have coverage with USAA.
Yeah, I used to.
You used to.
Yeah, okay. I moved away from them. Auto insurance seemed to be pretty good, but had bad experience with a hail claim a long time ago in El Paso, actually. We were talking about El Paso before this.
USAA, for all the commercials and everything protecting their servicemen and everyone, has been very horrible to deal with.
Yeah.
How they've treated their insureds, especially because they're veterans and stuff. It's bad. I would say, you know, that's one I would, there's more, but I don't want to mention them. I can give you a list.
Yeah. Well, I know of some other veterans, in my circle who have moved away from USA as well. Which, you know, they've traditionally been really good, but I don't know if maybe they just have grown so big that, you know, they're just kind of letting balls drop, but yeah, interesting.
And with your listeners listening to something that your insurance doesn't cover when you're a landlord investor is tenant insurance. So if your property has a fire or water loss, you know, your tenants are not covered. Their stuff is not covered. And a lot of the tenants will always say, hey, well, how are you going to help me? Or, you know, I want to stay here because I don't have any, you know, be very strict and adamant about them getting tenant, you know, tenant insurance, which is like $25 a month. But that would be something I would highly recommend. It's something that we recommend. We kind of push on our tenants to get rental insurance because our insurance is not going to cover them if something happens. And we see it too often where a home burns down and a tenant, I mean, loses everything.
Yeah.
They have no insurance. And that's just, it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's brutal. And the insurance companies that you mentioned, those are all pretty much online based insurance companies, right? Lemonade, Mika, and what was the other one?
Openly, Mika, Lemonade. Yeah. They're all online. I don't think they even have offices. It's all online.
It seems like those online marketplaces are popping up more and more, and they can be more competitive because they don't have 1,000, you know, State Farm offices.
And they might be a little bit more than, you know, the goal is of how State Farm and also all these companies, you know, make money. It's not by getting all these premiums because how can Allstate and all these companies grow if they're the lowest with premiums, right? There's only so many premiums you can charge.
Yeah.
So it's the claim process. If claims get underpaid and they set a reserve and it's underpaid, they're getting that money, they're investing that money. That's how all these companies have become so wealthy.